All right, now let's talk a little bit about this air scooter. Tell me about this thing.
Well, a friend and I came up with the idea originally because we were looking for what is the next invention we ought to work on together. He's a good friend of mine who kind of helps finance a lot of the things I do, and I said, you know what? I have a pilot's license, but I hate flying in a private plane. I always feel like I'm in a soapbox derby. They're rickety.
Yeah.
So what don't I like about regular airplanes is the way it started. I don't like having to be going 100 miles an hour to stay in the air. I don't like having to go to the airport to be able to fly, and it sort of went from there. And it then devolved into, okay, I need a rotorcraft. What's the problem with a conventional rotorcraft helicopter? First of all, it costs about $50,000 in training to learn how to fly one. Our air scooter sells for about $47,000, and it's not a kit, it's fully assembled, and you don't need to be trained in a sense that you don't need to spend that $50,000. We train you, takes maybe a weekend, depends on the average person, and you're a pilot.
I've been looking at the picture of the air scooter on your website, and all these websites that are associated to Woody are located on the coasttocoastam.com website now, linked up with his name. How high can this air scooter go, Woody?
Well, we don't recommend that you fly 10,000 feet, but if you live in Denver, you're already a mile up. And so, in fact, it's capable of going about that high, but the recommendation is you stay out of the traffic that's up there in the sky. All you want to really do is get out of the traffic down here.
Well, now, is this scooter, is it a plane? Is it a flying car? What the heck is it?
Well, looking at the website, you can kind of tell. And by the way, if you dig a little bit, there's actually a video on there of it flying. It's a rotorcraft like a helicopter, but it looks kind of bizarre. And if you know much about the history of helicopters, it goes back to the earliest Sikorsky, in a sense, that had twin rotating blades that went in opposite directions. And early on in the history of commercial helicopters, they abandoned that approach because you had to use the throttle either to go up and down, or the linkages got very, very complicated with two sets of blades. And so maintenance was a huge issue.
Okay, some people who haven't had the ability to go to their computer yet and taken a look at this or even looked at the video, those of us who are here right now, people driving in their cars and trucks, people who are just at home listening on their radio, tell us a little bit of how this works. Somebody gets in, they sit in the seat. What do they do? Turn a key? How does it get
You have
going?
An electric starter. That's part of it. And to qualify, by the way, under this Part 103 of the FAA regulations, which is where all the hang gliders and paragliders and powered parachutes fit into that classification, it's very strict requirements. It has to weigh, without any safety equipment, under 254 pounds, dry, no gas, okay. No oil. This thing meets that qualification. It has some safety equipment added. It, first of all, you notice, unlike a regular helicopter, it doesn't have a tail rotor. You get away from that by essentially moving the tail rotor over your head with the conventional rotor that's already up there, and they go in opposite directions. They're tilted in such a way that they complement each other. And so one thing happens immediately is they neutralize all the gyroscopic effects that you get on a regular helicopter. So when you push the stick forward. In this case, it's a handlebar, not all those kind of controls you've got on a regular helicopter. When you push it forward, you go forward. When you pull it backwards, you go backwards. None of this counterintuitive, very complicated stuff that you have to learn when you're flying a regular helicopter.
Do you take off like a helicopter?
I mean,
you
go straight up. This thing will go straight up and hover. I'm telling you, it's like defying gravity the first time you do it, even a foot off the ground. Now, get this. When you're up in the air, I weigh about 220 pounds. The craft weighs under 300 pounds, as I said. The blades are only going about 800 RPM, so you don't have this screaming sound above your head. That's pretty slow rotation. That's about idle for a car as far as the equivalence in the amount of movement the blades are doing.
What's the fuel, Woody? Is it gasoline?
Plain old gasoline.
What's the octane? Does it matter?
87? Usually premium. Now, again,
93, all right.
Yeah, this thing was made deliberately with the idea to get around all the things I hated about flying a private plane. Fly it out of your backyard. You know, if you live in New York City, in 10 minutes in any direction, pretty much, you're out in the boonies. You can fly.
I got to tell you, I live in Los Angeles 80% of the time. We all know what the traffic is like that. Are you saying that I could get up, get into this thing, pass all the traffic I want, maybe even move right along the freeway, but just hover above bridges, let's say.
Well, let me tell you, I don't know if you saw the thing about 3 weeks ago on 60 Minutes, but a little revelation came to me watching it, which I was unaware of. NASA has basically come up with a computer program designed for this kind of a craft, not for commercial airplanes, and they call it the Highway in the Sky. And the idea is a fairly simple computer program with a little viewing device on your dashboard or by your handlebar in this case, and it maps out visually a horizon and a equivalent of a freeway, and you fly along this thing. So you don't need to have all this training that is so complex when you ever looked inside of the cockpit of a regular airplane.
All right, Woody, I got to ask you this, though. What's the downside? I mean, can this thing crash? What happens?
Well, anything can crash, but if you keep the thing at a modest altitude, it's got enough inertia in the two sets of blades to settle to the ground. We also put, as a safety equipment, a set of rubber pontoons on it. You see that, again, if you get out of your car and go to a website for those listening. And it'll give you a cushioned landing. Also, by the way, it lands on water. And so
that's a good idea.
Yeah. Now, you know, anything can be deliberately crashed into a building or into a wall. But because you have control over it with this handlebar, no foot pedals, none of the stick or collective type interactive stuff you have to deal with on a regular helicopter, you're not preoccupied with all kinds of things in order to keep this thing flying straight and level.
Are there weather conditions, Woody, that you wouldn't go up in, even, let's say, 200, 300 feet?
Oh, I think so, sure. It's like, you know, I've sat on the runway on major airlines for a couple of hours in Texas in a jet because of weather. And so you've got to have common sense. By the way, the FAA regulates under Part 103 that this is for daylight flight, at least right now. They also regulate the speed. The 55 miles an hour, I believe, is the speed that was in fact set by the FAA.
Of course, when you're just going in a relatively straight line to someplace, I mean, that that cuts a lot of time down.
Imagine also,
even at 55 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah, and imagine you put a little GPS on this thing. You put a little dot where you start from, go anywhere you want, and you can make a beeline back to your starting point. You don't have to worry about getting lost.
Would you do that for us? Would you put the GPS unit in
there?
Oh,
yeah. We're looking, in fact, at all kinds of options. Interestingly, our original idea for this was strictly for fun and for civilians. All of a sudden now there's things like lifeguards. I mean, much easier to go out and rescue some. Imagine, I see this every year on TV in the winter when the ponds are frozen over and somebody fell through the ice. And they're trying to chip through with their oars with a couple of guys in a canoe.
Or they're on their belly and they're sliding across the ice to get to
them. Or on a roof of a house where there's a flooding situation. Go out, pick them up, take them ashore, or throw them a line. I mean, infinitely better than having to be stuck on terra firma in situations like that and try and rescue somebody.